Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Heather Uncensored.
Hi, everyone. I'm really excited today to be talking with Dr. Joseph Pizzorno, or as we called him at Bastyr, where he was president for many years, also the founder, Joe. Ethel and Sylvie are still in Canada. You know, they just sort of kind of gave up on things because of what was going on at SAG. But the good news is, president of SAG-AFTRA, Fran Drescher, was talking about it now. She had a long session with the board of directors, I hear, and she's really trying to rescind the vaccine mandate. So grateful for that. And that way, Sylvie and Ethel will be coming back soon, possibly. In any case, let's get going. We're going to be talking about chronic disease and about the mighty mitochondria, glutathione, why that's so important. So these are essential things to know.
Welcome, everyone, to Dr. Heather Uncensored. I'm really excited to have Dr. Joseph Pizzorno here today, as he's an old friend and teacher from Bastyr. So let me just read a little bit about him. Dr. Joseph Pizzorno, ND, is a transformational leader in medicine. As founding president of Bastyr University in 1978, he coined the term science-based natural medicine and led Bastyr to become the first ever accredited institution in this field, my alma mater. This validated the health promotion rather than only disease treatment could be credibly taught, researched, and practiced. A licensed naturopathic physician, educator, researcher, and expert spokesman, he is editor-in-chief of PubMed Indexed IMCJ, board chair of the Institute for Functional Medicine, founding board member of American Herbal Pharmacopoeia, and a member of the science boards of the Hecht Foundation and Bioclinic Naturals. He was appointed by Presidents Clinton and Bush to two prestigious government commissions to advise Congress on how to integrate natural medicine into healthcare. He is author or co-author of 6 textbooks, most recent Clinical Environmental Medicine, and 8 consumer books, most recent Healthy Bones, Healthy You, with his wife, Lara. So welcome, Joe, to Dr. Heather Uncensored.
Great. Well, thank you for that kind introduction. But more importantly, thank you for all the great work you do.
Oh,
thanks. Making our medicine available to more people.
Well, thank you. I mean, I guess I'm very committed. I had such a great practice, and now I just want to get that information out to people. So thank you. So I want to pick your brain about lots of different things. And I think that chronic illness is, you know, you really know so much about that. And I think people are really suffering with the effects of whether it's COVID or flu or whatever it is out there, you know, what kind of things that we can do. So I want to talk about mitochondria. I want to talk about glutathione. And, you know, I want to talk about that. And then I want to get into the philosophy and the history of naturopathic medicine that I learned at Bastyr and is really why I got the publisher I did for my book, upcoming book, Transforming Trauma, because when I sent her the little blurb I had, I added the Flexner Report. And she said, I've never heard of that. You know, she's in England. She's Hammersmith Books. They do so many different health books. And she was like, oh, I haven't heard of that before. And so I was like, okay, Flexner Report, 1910. So I think that's one of the reasons that she, I mean, I guess she liked the book too, but we had just really this great connection. So I thank you for teaching that, because I've talked to chiropractors, I've talked to other people. I'm sure at National they talk about it too, especially with Susanna Sarenko. But really, that's really where it started, when I realized how things were not equal and how we were really getting bamboozled.
Yep.
So I think a good way to start talking about chronic disease is, you gave me a really nice quote for my book. And I'm just going to read it because it sums it all up. And you said, we suffer the highest burden of chronic disease in every age group ever in history. Why? Because we've become a population that looks for simplistic symptom reduction rather than addressing the underlying causes of disease. The result is growing trauma to our bodies, psyche, and spirituality. And that went on a little bit, but I think that's where I want to start. So whatever comes up for you, we'll just start there.
Sure. And so, I've been medicine now literally for over half a century. Yeah. So I've had a chance to, I've read a lot of research. I've seen a lot of patients. I've taught a lot of doctors. And I've had a chance to kind of look things very deeply and look at them for over a long period of time.
Right.
And so one of the things I've noticed is how much more disease there is now than when I first started as a naturopathic doctor way back in the late 1970s.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my first year in practice, I was so excited when I finally saw my first diabetic patient.
Right.
Now, people may find that a little surprising right now, but when I started practice, diabetes affected like less than 1% of the population.
Absolutely. I like my experience too.
Yeah, but now it's at least 10 times as high.
Yeah.
And so, and then when I look at children, when I was taking care of children because I was doing natural childbirth. So I got to take care of children before they were born, sometimes even before they're conceived.
All right.
Like creating an environment to be as healthy as possible for the mother. Of course, you get as healthy as possible babies.
Yeah.
Now the children are so sick.
They're so sick.
Stunning.
Yeah.
So I decided, well, this is my kind of subjective observation. What's the research say? And I started looking at the research, and it was stunning. Not only do we have more chronic diseases that were known chronic diseases, but we're now having new diseases we never seen before.
Right.
A great example is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Right.
And why they call it non-alcoholic fatty liver disease? Because always in the past, when people had fatty liver disease, it was always because of alcoholism.
Right.
Now it's not because of alcoholism. It's because of, well, why is it? It's because of all the toxins in the environment and the consumption of high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
So you just look at disease after disease and new disease after new disease, and we are incredibly sick. So big problems.
Yeah, really big problems. And all those poisons that are coming into us, that whether they're injected or swallowed, people don't understand the damage they're doing to our bodies.
Yep.
And how our children, neurologically, with autism, everything, people just don't understand how bad that is. And they just think, oh, well, I have a neighbor who just got COVID. So she immediately went to the hospital and she got all these pills. And I was like, no, but you can't say anything, but it's just that is just the mindset that makes me completely crazy.
Yeah. And what you just said, that's one of the things that bothers me the most about what's been happening. And that is, you can't have an alternative position. You can't say, well, wait a minute, there's other factors involved that are really important. No, nope, can't say that.
Right.
Exercise, lose your license, et cetera. It's ridiculous what's happened to our society.
Right. Although I think that we are going to come out on top. I feel very optimistic about it. That's why I have this podcast. And for me, it's surprising. I listened to Tucker Carlson every night and last night. And it was so fantastic because he talked about the pharmaceutical industry and how SSRIs doesn't make any sense. And, with the serotonin, that's not what's happening. So I really love to get on his show, be able to take it one step further to talk about gut function and about, precursors to, brain, for the molecules for the brain and the neurotransmitters, because I think that he's one of the few people on just, sort of standard media right now who's actually talking the truth.
I'm so delighted to hear that we have people who are who have significant audiences finally starting to bring attention to what's happened. And it's been just terrible. When the whole COVID thing started, I was hoping that people would look at this as a wake-up call.
Exactly. Okay, well,
the people get the sickest are with COVID and die from COVID. Well, they're the sickest people. And
right.
They're sick from things that are not a genetic at all.
Right.
So things based on diet and lifestyle and environment. But what happened was the exact opposite. People went into fear instead and drove even more into the drug model, which, the big advantage of the drug model is it keeps people from dying. Well, nice. Didn't do anything for promoting people's health.
Uh-huh.
And so, gave up on the health stuff and doubled down on the death prevention stuff to the point where it's actually causing more side effects than benefits.
Exactly. I know. Nobody ever mentioned anything. I mean, my book, nobody wanted to know what you could do. Nobody wants to know about glutathione or, quercetin, or they'll talk a little bit about vitamin D, a little bit about vitamin C, but that's as far as it goes. Otherwise, they're like ivermectin, you know, hydrochloroquine. I'm like, you don't have to do those things. You don't have to go that far.
No.
And people don't get it.
Yeah, I wrote an editorial on what I call controllable risk factors for COVID. And it's in PubMed if you want to look it up.
Okay.
And it's a free download, the publisher.
Do you want to give me exactly what I could look up?
Just go to PubMed and put in Pizzorno and COVID and you'll find it.
Oh, okay.
So the publisher graciously made them available for free. But anyway, I just go through and look at all the various controllable factors that people can control, okay?
Right.
And it shows how it affects their risk for COVID. And it turns out people who are doing everything right have very, very, very low risk of COVID. But I won't look at that.
It's almost as if people want to be scared. People want drama in their life. They want to be on the edge of the planet. Like, oh my God, this whole thing is, you know, I don't know, maybe low dopamine.
I don't know what
the only thing I can think of that it just feels like one person gets afraid and then the next person, and then they're a community of fear and oh, let's band together. And so instead of thinking, geez, we can do something about this.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So what do you say to people in that state?
You know, it's a very good question. And I wish I had good answers for you, but I'll just say very honestly, I've been involved in many debates around this topic, and people who dive into the fear mentality, they can't get out of the fear.
Right.
I don't have any good answers for you. It's,
right.
It's shocking to me how people who I consider normally pretty intelligent have bought into the fear game. I don't get it.
Right. Exactly. You know, I'm a member of SAG, and so can't go out for auditions if you're not vaccinated. So I, you know, that was going to be my next career after I finish these books and have some fun. And so, but the president, Fran Drescher, who was actually married to Dr. Shiva Iyadari several years ago, and he's so outspoken, he's on our wavelength. Anyways, I read a couple of days ago that she actually took it up with the board and said, you know, we got to get rid of these vaccine mandates. And she couldn't believe it. For 2 hours, people were just spewing all this stuff to her, negativity. So I'm going to send her a copy of my book on surviving a viral pandemic. But I also wanted to just sit down and talk to her with those people to say, you know, the reason you're like that is because you don't know what to do. You don't know how the body works, and you don't know that there are substances out there that will keep people healthy. I mean, that's even beyond all the, you know, the human rights part of this, but just in terms of their fear of disease. And that's why they keep spouting it out, because they weren't trained like we were, and they don't have that experience. And
But also, they were explicitly trained to believe in disease. Not
right.
Just medical doctors, but the whole community.
Yes.
I mean, I also have to give Tucker Carlson credit for being willing to take it on, because if you go to the evening news, look at the commercials.
Yeah.
Well, like a third of them are drug commercials.
That's right.
Like, and the drug commercials are now creating new diseases that people can be afraid of, and then get them to then demand drugs from the doctors to treat those diseases, when in many situations they're functional, meaning there's a body saying, my physiology is not working quite right, and now we're producing symptoms to say there's a problem, fix the problem. No. What they do is take drugs to turn off the symptoms, so you turn off the body's messages that there's a problem. Well, so what happens? You get more disease. And as our forebears, the naturopathic men and women 100 years ago said, if you treat acute disease with symptom relief only, you get more chronic disease. And guess what? They were right.
And more death. Apparently, all the homeopaths who were treating, you know, in the 1918, flu epidemic, if people were taking aspirin or anything to reduce the fever, they were the ones that died. So it's so interesting that after all these years, we still don't understand that. Yeah. I know. Well, let's just talk about your work with mitochondria. What exactly are you doing there?
So thanks for that inquiry, because I think this is incredibly important. A few months ago, a laboratory, Great Plains Laboratory, asked me to develop a lecture for them on how to interpret urinary organic acids. Right. So urinary organic acids are basically molecules produced by metabolism that when the body doesn't need them anymore, it gets rid of them in the urine. Now, this is an area I've been interested in for a long time. So, you know, my textbook in natural medicine, which first came out in 1985.
Right.
In the 90s, I got a chapter from Andy Braley and Richard Lord on urinary organic acids as a way of understanding what's going on with mitochondria and metabolism in the body. I was really excited about it. And so I think I was one of the first people to actually publish a substantive document on that. So I've been interested in this area for a long time, but kind of just paying attention, but not deep into it. So when Great Plains came to me and said, well, do a lecture on it, I realized, okay, now I got to really look at it.
Right.
So I started diving into looking at the molecules in the urine, what it looks like in normal people, and then what it looks like with people who have autism spectrum disorder, right, people with cancer, and people with COVID.
Right.
And I was stunned by what I found. So it turns out that many of the environmental toxins we're being exposed to, metals and chemicals, and the nutrient deficiencies that have now evolved in our diet, basically sabotage the mitochondria. And most people don't realize how incredibly important mitochondria are for people. And I'm going to potentially embarrass you, but I'm sorry about it. I'm going to embarrass a lot of other people as well.
That's okay.
So when people are at rest throughout the day, so they're not doing anything physically active, just being alive, how much mitochondria do you think the average person burns every day? Now, the reason I'm asking this is because, as you know, our bodies are enzyme machines, and those enzyme machines require energy, and that energy is is almost always ATP.
I know it's an awful lot.
Yeah, well, so just take a guess. How much ATP does a body produce every day at rest, ignoring when we're running?
Well, I guess it's a lot more than 3,200, but that's the number that's coming to me.
3,200 what?
3,200 ATP? 3,200.
Okay, well, let's say milligrams.
Okay milligrams. Let's see.
Or you could say 3,200 grams.
Yeah.
Okay. The right answer is we produce our body. By the way, that's pretty close. By the way, we produce our body weight in ATP every day. So if you weigh 150 pounds,
right,
you produce 150 pounds of ATP every day.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the mitochondria, as you know, make up one quarter to one third of the volume of a cell, because it then produces all this energy for everything else to work. So it turns out the mitochondria, because they're the most metabolically active organ in our bodies, they're organelle, but incredibly metabolically active, nutrient deficiencies and environmental toxins are absolutely devastating.
Right.
So the first place these things show up is actually mitochondria. But people don't, in early stages, only recognize this as, oh, I don't have as much energy as I used to. Well, I've grown up, I'm getting older, you know, I'm not a kid anymore, so it's normal for me to have lower levels of energy.
Right.
No. Right. What's happened is, as we get older, we wreck our mitochondria. So by the time the average person is aged about 55, they've damaged their mitochondria so much that their energy production drops dramatically. So they now think, oh, I have lower energy. Now that's because I'm older. No.
No.
You wreck your mitochondria.
So because the cell is so full of congested with toxins and the mitochondria can't work properly.
Yeah, they directly poison the mitochondria.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting, now then we started looking at mitochondria in people with autism spectrum disorder, with cancer and COVID.
Right.
Turns out there's a lot of abnormalities. And my own belief is that the ultimate solution to all three of those conditions is to understand exactly how the mitochondria are being damaged and then fixing it.
Right. So can you go into that a little bit more, how it's actually damaged?
Sure. So if we look at, let's look at autism. I have a case I'm going to fucking give you. So as you probably know, when you measure the levels of lactic acid in the blood of people with autism, most of them have elevated levels. So in general, elevated levels of lactate mean that either people are exercising really hard, because that's what happens, you exercise really hard beyond your aerobic capacity.
Right.
Or the mitochondria through the normal, what's called oxidative phosphorylation. I'll talk about that more in a moment. But anyway, the mitochondria have an efficient way of making energy and an inefficient way of making energy. So the reason we have those two capabilities, the efficient way is, well, we need to function properly. But right. something happens, the mitochondria can't do that really efficient oxidative phosphorylation as a backup system. Turns out Y has lots of backup systems. So right. Something I'm coming to recognize better. But anyway, it has a backup system that will still produce energy to keep us alive, but it's not very efficient, and it produces lactic acid.
That's the pyruvate?
That lactic acid. It can be pyruvate as well.
Right.
Usually it's more lactic acid, but yes, you'll tend to see elevated pyruvate in autistic kids as well.
Right.
So that tells us mitochondria working properly. So if you get the mitochondria working properly in autistic kids early enough in the process, you can dramatically change those children.
Right.
So like, for example, an autistic kid that was diagnosed at age 4 and had high elevated lactic acid levels, I did a urinary organic acid to determine what was going on with the mitochondria. Find out, oh yeah, look at that. That enzyme in the mitochondria not working properly. Now, was it poisoned or was it because of genetic abnormality or nutrient deficiency? I don't know. I just know that enzyme's not working properly.
And which enzyme is that?
So what trends, every kid with autism is going to be different.
Oh, okay.
So then we look at which enzyme's not working properly. The way we can determine that is we have the mitochondria. I wish your audience could see me right now with my hands, you know, my hands describing things. So here we have a molecule that the body wants to change to another molecule. Okay. So the enzyme does that. Converts one molecule to another molecule. That's how our body works. Now, for that enzyme to work properly, you have to have the protein foundation of the enzyme has been made properly, which is determined by our genetics. But then it needs to have what's called a cofactor to go from being a protein, which is inert, to an enzyme, which is metabolically active. Right. And those cofactors are typically vitamins and minerals, vitamin or mineral. So if you don't have a vitamin or a mineral, not going to work very well. But there's a third factor here, and that is toxins. So the way toxins cause so much damage in the body is by displacing the nutritional cofactor in the enzyme, replacing it with a toxic metal or a toxic chemical.
Right.
Okay, so here we have this kid. And the way we determine then that enzyme's not working is we look at the urine levels of the molecule that is before that enzyme and the molecule that is after that enzyme. And if it turns out the molecule before that enzyme is really high in the urine, the molecule after that enzyme is really low in the urine, means the enzyme's not working. Now, it doesn't tell us why, it tells us where to look.
Right.
So I have an autistic kid, high lactate levels, did that test for him, that enzyme is not working properly. And the cofactor, the vitamin cofactor for that enzyme to work properly was vitamin B2. Mm. So I gave him 50 times the normal amount of vitamin B2. And I did some other things to help his mitochondria work properly as well. Uh-huh. And you would not know that the kid was autistic today. Now, this is now 15 years later. You wouldn't know the kid was autistic.
And how long does he need that B2 for the rest of his life?
Yeah. So whenever he went off the B2, his autistic spectrum disorder came back again.
Right, right. Wow, that's amazing, eh?
Now, the problem is, I think this only works for about a third of kids with autism. Uh-huh. For those one third of kids, this is dynamite.
Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic. And what are the other things that you did for that child?
Okay, so the other things we do is, as you recall from your basic sciences, the mitochondria uses for energy, fats, carbohydrates, and proteins, okay, are more specifically glucose, fatty acids, and amino acids. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that many of these kids, where their things aren't working properly, when you give them what are called medium-chain fatty acids, it bypasses some of the problematic steps in the mitochondria and makes it easier for these kids to produce energy.
Right.
So a typical thing with autistic kids is, first off, remove causes. And there's a lot of food allergies, lactose intolerance, things of this nature. And then give them coconut oil. The cheapest form of medium-chain fatty acids is coconut oil. And then give them a good quality B-complex, make sure everything's covered. And then high doses of the cofactor for the enzyme that we figured out is not working properly.
Right. Just an aside about the coconut oil is, it was, my neurons felt like they were completely falling over at the end of writing this book. It was just so intense. And what I thought, well, why don't I just take coconut butter to feed, you know, I'd start getting these weird aura and stuff. I just had to take coconut butter or coconut oil. And it was almost immediately, you could feel the brain cells picking it up. That's when I knew that that's exactly what was going on.
Nice.
Yeah. I also took the BDNF. I was actually really gobbling those up in the last few months.
Wait, BDNF?
Is it BDNF? Am I saying it wrong?
Well, there is a BDNF. I didn't know you could take it. It's something called brain-derived
neurotransmitter. Yeah, brain-derived neurotransmitter. Yeah. Yeah, well, Research Nutritional has one. And so...
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So...
Thank you. That's very...
Oh, yeah. That's people love it.
Fascinating also.
Yeah. Well, and they have all these different things in it. You know, like they have lion's mane and all these different brain botanicals and that's where they get the BDNF. But yeah, so that really helped me finishing the book because my brain was definitely collapsing. It was really quite bizarre. And I just realized that last night how my brain is fine again. Thank goodness.
Great.
That was worth it for the book. I liked writing it. But medium changed triglycerides from coconut oil or coconut butter, it's magic.
For the right people, it is really important.
Yeah. Well, so 50 times, I just want to go back to that B2, 50 times. So would that be, how much is that? How many milligrams?
I was giving them 50 milligrams, 50 to, actually, I think it was 100 milligrams to combat to his age was at the time.
Okay, 100, okay. All righty. Okay, well, let's just talk about glutathione too, because glutathione, you know, when I wrote this book on PTS, they're talking about that enzyme, the glutathione S transferase, is really how you can predict PTS because it's dysregulated. And then if you look at COVID, and when I had, I don't know, COVID or flu, whatever I had last month, also glutathione, I started taking glutathione, everything started healing. I thought, wow, this is amazing. So first of all, I want to ask you the question, what do you think about the precursor N-acetylcysteine as opposed to glutathione? And then if you want to just do a little bit of a deep dive in glutathione.
Yes. Yeah, so it's hard to overstate the importance of glutathione because, as you know, it is the most important intracellular antioxidant, but more importantly, it is the most important antioxidant within the mitochondria.
Exactly.
And it turns out that, you know, as you know, there's two versions of glutathione. There's a reduced version of glutathione, which is incredibly important as an antioxidant. And there's the oxidized form of glutathione, which is what you get after glutathione has done its job.
Right.
So one of the ways the mitochondria assess the quality and the health of a cell is by monitoring the ratio of reduced glutathione to oxidized glutathione. Now, healthy cells have a 10 to 100-fold higher level of reduced glutathione compared to oxidized glutathione. But once it gets below about 10 to 1, now the mitochondria realizing, wait a minute, there's too much oxidative stress here. Most likely the DNA got damaged and therefore probably going to become carcinogenic. So the mitochondria then kill the cells before they can become carcinogenic, before they become cancers, I should say. So people don't get cancer until the mitochondria have failed. Not only that, but then once the mitochondria have failed, the immune system has to fail as well. So every day, the average person produces between 300 and 500 cancer cells. Okay, so these are cancer cells that got past the mitochondria, and the immune system clears them up. So you have to have both cancerous experience stimulation, you have to have the mitochondria fail, and then the immune system has to fail, and then the cancer happens. So you have to kind of look at the whole picture, and as much a picture as you can treat, that is going to determine the results for the patient.
Isn't that amazing, eh? That's great. That's terrific. So how did you get into looking at mitochondria? Is that through GPL or?
I've always been interested in it. So as you know, I've been a lifelong avid basketball player. So I played full court basketball for 2 hours each time, three times a week. With guys half my age. Okay. And I did that for almost 40 years.
Okay. Wow.
But I knew early on, if I wanted to keep playing basketball, I had to protect my mitochondria because as you know, when you do intense exercise, it produces a lot of oxidative stress. And if you don't protect your mitochondria, they get burned out. So that's one of the reasons why professional athletes rarely last past about age 35, because by about age 35, they've done so much damage to mitochondria, they simply don't have enough energy to keep thinking at a high level.
Interesting. Interesting. Wow. So do you recommend CoQ10?
Yeah. So how do you protect glutathione? So there are a number of ways of doing it. One, of course, is make sure the body has the precursors it needs to produce the glutathione. And that's the best way to do that is with N-acetylcysteine, or NAC for short. That produces glutathione. But then the way to protect the glutathione is to, number one, is make sure the high energy electrons in the mitochondria are progressing through the complexes appropriately. But what do I mean by that? So the way the body produces ATP is by taking high energy electrons and taking that energy away and make it into ATP. There's a lot of technicality here. I won't get into it a lot. The problem is that about 1 to 2% of those high energy electrons are lost. Now, the body wants to use them all, can't quite use them all, so they leak. Well, those high energy electrons are being leaked right next to the mitochondrial DNA. So if the mitochondrial DNA, if the electrons aren't quenched immediately with glutathione, they damage the mitochondrial DNA. And that's where you then lose mitochondrial function. The reason CoQ10 is so important is that it is the molecule that moves the high energy electrons from complex to complex in the mitochondria as their energy is being removed from them. If not enough glutathione, you can't control the electrons. They then leak out and damage the mitochondrial DNA.
Wow.
So that's the problem with the statin drugs. The statin drugs decrease coenzyme Q production. So when a lot of people have these muscle pain and tiredness from taking statin drugs, guess what? It's because they're poisoning the mitochondria.
Right. And do you think 400 milligrams is too high every day?
400 milligrams of?
Of the CoQ10?
That's higher than I normally prescribe. I think 100 milligrams is fine unless there's a good reason for it.
Okay.
So a person has Parkinson's disease or some other significant neurological deficit, then yeah, I'll use more CoQ10.
Right. Okay, good. Wow. It's just so fascinating, you know, that it comes down to something like that and that people can take action. And yet they continue to make statin drugs to deplete people. Wow.
I don't get it. I'll be honest with you. It seems to me the research is pretty clear. It causes problems.
Well, there just seems to be so much ignorance. I think I'm trying to develop patience for ignorance. It's terrible. Sounds so arrogant. But the truth is that once you know these things, it makes you crazy to hear all these other things and people are suffering. And you just think now, you know, people really are in this mass fear. Some people call it mass psychosis. And it almost, to me, it really is, because people are massively ignorant and they don't want to know anything else. Yeah.
Well, that's a little more pejorative than I want to go. I'll say it a little differently. I'll say they've been taught. They've been taught to be fearful and dependent. So you've heard the derogatory term old wives' tales, right? Mm-hmm. That was derogatory. So where did that come from? It came from the MDs wanting to discredit the neighborhood wise woman who were the healers in the communities.
Right.
The neighborhood wise woman who was the herbalist, who did the natural childbirth, et cetera.
Right.
Well, they had to get rid of this person because they were keeping people away from drugs. Okay.
Yeah.
So they said, old wives tale, by definition, their definition, that doesn't work, not real.
Right.
Of course, some of the things weren't right, but you know something? Heck, a lot more stuff in conventional medicine wasn't right.
Right.
Remember, they called it the age of heroic medicine when they're killing people with mercury poisoning.
Exactly.
The doctor was engaged in heroic actions to save the patient and accidentally gave him too much mercury.
Right. And the population resisted, though, in the 1800s.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. They didn't like it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what has to happen now. Yeah. And I think for me, it's just that when I did my biology degree, I'll never forget this one professor saying, always keep an open mind.
Ah.
And I think that's what's really disappointed me in, you know, so many ways that things are happening, especially now, that there's no open mind. There's no like, oh, well, maybe this isn't the right way to go. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I just got this message that this Zoom was going to stop in 5 minutes. Uh-oh. But I can call you back and then I can splice it. But,
sure.
Maybe I should do that right now. Now that we. So let's talk about how did you, in terms of the philosophy and the history of naturopathic medicine and talking about Benedict Lust and all that, that was really important to you to teach at Bestier, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm not sure what your question is.
Pardon me?
I'm not sure what your question is.
Well, my question is just, that was important to you. Whereas when I've talked to other people who were affected by, say, the Flexner Report or the whole change in medicine in the late 1800s, how it went from all these different types of medical doctor, you know, the homeopathic medical doctor, and then the naturopathic profession came in at the late 1800s. Like, I don't hear that from anybody else that actually they knew the history.
Oh.
So again, I just wanted to thank you for that.
I'm a little surprised others aren't aware of it. But, you know, when I became curious about this field, I looked into it fairly broadly, and I pretty quickly recognized that the Flexner Report was what was used to destroy anything other than drug medicine. And
exactly.
Few people realized that when the Flexner Report came out, the schools that were most effective were schools that were primarily women and primarily natural medicine and homeopathic.
Right.
It's supposed to be objective and science-based. No, it was totally political and economic-based.
Exactly. So that's really what we're struggling with now and how we get that back. Yeah, I think we get it back because at some point people are going to reflect and see what worked and what didn't work during this time. I think it's all about the experience we have. That's why we're so committed to it, because we see that it works so well. It works on ourselves and it works in our patients.
Yes.
And for me, I think it was sort of astounding when I left Bastyr in 87 to go back to Vancouver to start my clinic. And I was like, well, does this stuff really work? I mean, you know, you see it in the clinic, you know, when you're at school, but now these people are going to pay me for this. And I was always so shocked how everything just, it worked.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping that more and more people will realize that, but they have to get the experience. You know, how do we get them to have the experience?
Yes.
Certainly people with children who are autistic really get it. I've had several people on who were damaged by Ted Kuntz's child. This is way, way back. And his child was the DPT vaccine. And he did go to a naturopathic doctor and he was helped tremendously, but not, you know, enough. And he actually died in his 30s. But a lot of people, like, you know, I've had different people on, Brian Hooker, people, you know, realize, and they realize the gut connection. Maybe we should talk a little bit about the gut connection and how that works in terms of the brain.
That's a great one. And you know, as an old-time naturopathic adage, disease begins in the gut.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
I find it funny how these newer professions and even some like conventional medicine start having these huge discoveries about, you know, you got dysbiosis, then you've got, optimizing, crystallizing the gut. And now let's study the organisms in the gut and let's look at these genetic testings and things like this. Whereas you go back to the old time naturopathic stuff, it was, well, the gut will be just fine if you eat real food and you eat fermented products and you don't eat all this crap and you don't take antibiotics. You don't have to get into all these fancy details. You just go for it.
Very simple. So this,
and it's interesting, concept after concept that the naturopathic doctors figured out over 100 years ago are now new discoveries after the naturopaths were trashed by the conventional medicine's political bodies. And it turns out what we were doing was right.
Exactly. I know. Yeah, well, I do think in time, you know, history, it always, you know, cream always rises, the truth always rises. But in the meantime, there's just so much suffering.
Yeah. I would say go further. Unnecessary suffering.
Yes, exactly.
Unnecessary suffering.
All right. So let's just wind up. I'd like you to tell me a little bit about your book, Clinical Environmental Medicine.
Oh, thanks. So, when I was, how I should say this, one of the things I do in the world that is both humbling and a great honor is I spend a lot of time looking at research and then trying to figure out how to make it useful for clinicians seeing patients. Right. So people like you who are actually seeing patients are so important, because my job is, what's the next step? How do we do this better? How do we deepen our patients? So I work really, really hard at that for a long period of time. Well, I forgot the original question. Sorry.
Well, just what the clinical environment of medicine book, your latest book.
Oh, clinical environment. Yes. Okay. So anyway, so I ended up writing a book for consumers called The Toxin Solution. And I got together with one of my graduates from the very first class of Bastyr, graduate in 1982, Dr. Walter Crinion,
right. An
expert in environmental medicine.
I pre-doctored with him.
Oh, you did? Oh,
yeah. That was a great experience. Yeah,
that was fantastic.
Yeah.
But what was great was Walter brought to the textbook his immense decades-long experience with detoxifying people. And I brought to it my deep dive into the research around how environmental metals and chemicals are causing disease. So in many ways, Walter and so much of the environmental medicine community focus on what I would call the yellow canaries. That is, the people who are most seriously damaged by environmental toxins. They were the first ones to start showing the problems as the levels started increasing. So I developed a lot of understanding and focus around how do you deal with people who are seriously suffering environmental damage. What I realized about 10 years ago now, I realized, wait a minute, this is affecting everybody, not just the yellow canaries. And I started looking at research, and the first one I looked at was diabetes. And I looked at, why is diabetes 10 times more common than when I was taking care of patients 50 years ago? And I started looking, and it turns out environmental toxins are the primary cause.
Yeah.
And researchers call them diabetogens. So I then realized we need to create a textbook for doctors that compiled all the research around how these toxins cause them disease, how do you diagnose them, how do you get them out of the body? And so I'm really proud of this book. I think it's now sold about 2,000 copies so far, but it's all over the world, which
that's
I think
great. That's fantastic. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow, you've had an amazing career, Joe. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I've been at it for a long time, so things kind of add up.
Right. I know. Well, I mean, it does seem I went to Bastyr in 1983, 84, because I graduated in 87. Yeah, it was a very different time.
Indeed.
Well, it's great that we're still on this road, and it's just, it's really wonderful for me to talk to you and to share your information with my listeners. And so I thank you so much. And
well, again, I love what you do.
What's that?
I love what you do.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm hoping that my trauma book will really awaken people to the fact of natural medicine, how that is so important with all the things we talk about, like balancing the biochemistry, and then just getting people to delve into things that are also really natural medicine, like writing or dance or vocalizing. I had Graves' disease. I don't know if you knew that, but I had Graves' disease and I healed it basically naturally. And I didn't have to have, I know my brother-in-law thought that I'd have to have my thyroid cut out or I'd have to have it radiated. No. I said, no, that's not going to happen. And so I did this whole thing. It's actually in, what's it called? NDNR, and also the Townsend letter. I wrote an essay on it. But I also did a fun radio play, which is episode 12 on Dr. Heather Uncensored. And that is, it's kind of goofy, but it's fun, but it shows you what Graves was about. But in terms of Graves, I realized I had to sing every day to keep it away. So that's natural too. So it's just expanding the definition.
Sing every day.
You sing. Yeah. You have to sing, or if you don't sing, you hum, but I just started singing and I realized how important that was to that chakra. And I needed to always say my truth. So I'm even more direct than ever. And I'm hoping that in time, people will understand what the expressive arts, how that combines with natural medicine.
Boy, I love the idea.
Yeah.
How kind of practical and biochemical oriented I am. So do you think the singing increase blood supply to your tissues and help bring out the lymphatics because of all that continual vibration.
Yeah, exactly. And otherwise,
that's a really good idea.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, like an old friend of mine, Ryan Drum, he's a PhD. I think he was a NATO scholar, actually. But he has a whole thing on his website about all the toxins that the thyroid has to deal with.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, how it's terrifying, really, especially for me living in Los Angeles, all the toxins that are here. But I get it out by the infrared sauna or, you know, all these different ways that I do it. But singing just seems to unlock something. So it's a great excuse to sing because I absolutely love to sing. You know, we write musicals, so it's all part of it. It's all part of the whole thing. Well, I hope you'll come on again soon, maybe you know, in a few months or something, because it's just to go on and on, but we'll stop here so people can get the gist of all the things that we were talking about.
We're quite congruent, Heather. I've always enjoyed you as a student, and I've enjoyed you as a graduate. So
thank you so much. Okay, so.
Take care. Bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Okay, everyone. That was awesome. It was also a lot of excellent information. And it'd be great if you share it with your friends and family with health issues. Have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.